Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, welcome to the 420th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Robert Jones and Sourabh Chakraborty. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and you are in luck, folks, because this is another Matt and Warren episode, two in a row, right off of networking. And we get another one-word episode, hopefully. We'll see if we stay on topic. We probably won't. I apologize in advance.
Who knows? In our defense, we have another episode in the can. We're just waiting to release it closer to the movie's release date. So
right. It's all about,
it doesn't feel like we're doing back-to-back Matt and Warren episodes, even though
we are.
Release-wise, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all scheduling issues, right?
Ooh, nice. Which is what we're talking about today on the show. How to schedule your lives. Warren, you're dealing with that currently. I am as well, in kind of a different sort of world and a different sort of, maybe a little bit more of a macro sense. And so we're going to get into the day-to-day of what it is to be a working filmmaker and also how we juggle all of the different aspects of our lives and how complicated it is to not have just like a single point person for all of that. You know, in conventional lives, you ask your boss, hey, can I get this week off or whatever it is? And then that's kind of the main thing you're worried about.
But honestly, right? I don't think anyone has conventional lives anymore. My guess is that it is an order of magnitude higher of people nowadays that are freelancers, that work from home, that have side hustles, sure, that do multiple things.
Sure.
Even if you have the office job, you are, writing screenplays at night, or you're trying to sell this thing,
you're talking about the erosion of the middle class and also the how the entertainment is contracting in such a way that people have to side hustle. This is a way headier topic than I realized.
A combination of that, but more of an erosion of the 9-to-5 job. Anyhow, so that is scheduling. That is something. I think the other kind of like broad stroke Hollywood scheduling thing that comes up all the time is people that do have day jobs that are trying to write screenplays. We've covered that a lot on the podcast in terms of, morning pages, like what your wife Chrissy does, and deep work, what our friend Carlin Hudson does in terms of just logging in a few hours every day. You've kind of, I think, jumped around different methods. You've done like the early morning writing. You've done.
Yeah,
the,
like, I'm back on early morning, but it's rough for sure. Early morning is a lot harder now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for me, I mean, I think this episode really is a little bit more of a, one of us explains the situation and the other one gives their advice type of episode. And that's, I had my I'm overwhelmed episode, and we actually got a lot of emails and texts and things saying like, oh, I'm also overwhelmed. I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one. But yeah, this last week was a really rough one for me, and I was just going to.
Yeah.
Tell you the various reasons why.
Before we get into it, you described these problems as uptown problems, and then I know a lot of people are dealing with kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah. Down suburb problems.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The valley problems, but like, I guess what I'm saying is like, you're stressed because of trying to fulfill every opportunity that you can and do it that way. But there are also people who are like just dying for opportunity, but that doesn't mean that any complication is less valid or that your feelings are less valid. And also I'm hoping that in talking through this, maybe people walk away with a nugget or two that works on whatever the side of the coin they're on.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, I guess, and I'm just pulling this out of my ass, it's the disclaimer, but I kind of think there's like kind of four stages to a Hollywood career, especially as a freelancer and like a writer, director, creative type of person. And I think the first one is you've just moved to LA or whatever, wherever you breaking do your in. Thing, sure. You're breaking in and you will PA, you'll get a writer's assistant job, you'll work for free, you'll be someone's assistant, you'll take a mentorship, you'll apply to things, you'll get your people to make shorts with you, you'll work at the movie theater, whatever. Like anything that will give you any sort of film experience you'll take, and hopefully you'll also get paid at some point, right? That's kind of stage one. Stage two, you are starting to kind of be a little more selective. Like, hey, I'm only going to take jobs that are either DPing or directing, right. Or I'm a gaffer. Yeah. It's like my day job, but I'm going to, if I'm doing something smaller, I'm the director or producer or whatever. And you can be a little more selective with the type of work you get. And then stage three, which is, I think, where I am, is like you're kind of settled on what you do. You know, I'm a director, I'm a DP, I'm a producer, I'm whatever it is. Like, that's my passion. And I have a lot of opportunities, you know, so, and I feel super thankful for having a lot of opportunities doing the thing that I really want to do. But I'm not in a position yet where I can just turn down a bunch of them, right? Like, I don't want to be like...
Which is stage four. You're so in demand that, like...
Stage four, you're a brand name director, writer, producer, actor. And you're like, Ryan Gosling needs to do zero hustling to get a job offer, right? Maybe if he really wants to work with some director, you know, he might have to like work hard to get, but he gets offered every day, right?
This isn't the point actually that you're, this is an off topic, but I think there is a little bit of a myth about that stage four. Like, certainly doors open, you know, and I'm not saying that in a certain sense it is easier, but in a certain other pretty valid sense, it's just as hard. You know, the people that we admire, who we think of as these name brand filmmakers, most of them are self-generating. And yes, do they have the connections to get those pitches heard and greenlit faster or not or whatever? But like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that like, it's always a grind. It's just that maybe you're grinding in a bungalow on a lot, but like the people who are like, I made it, and they kick their heels up on their desk and, you know, don't grind, end up going away pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I don't think, look, I think what we've learned over the last few years, especially as we've been talking about the sustainability of filmmaking as a career, is that the grind never ends. Everyone's always grinding and competing, and doesn't matter how old you are, or what generation of filmmaker you are, you're always like fighting to get, you know, jobs. But I do think I have, like, there's another director on the roster that I'm at Art Class that I know will not take anything like under $1 million, you know? And I've talked to a lot of friends that work at kind of big fancy companies that have celebrity directors at them.
Sure.
And
sure.
They say like, oh, this director, once he gets his DGA insurance, he doesn't take any more jobs. Or this director, you know, just directed like this huge TV show, like every episode of it. And he, unless he's like really excited by the material for a commercial, he's not going to take the job. Or she's, you know, just so busy shooting features. Yeah.
Right. Right. And yeah, that's the difference, is like they're turning down great commercial work because they're busy shooting features. But if they stopped shooting features, eventually that commercial work doesn't get offered the same way. That's really my point.
Well, but I think Tarantino doesn't really direct commercials, but if someone was like, hey, and if Anonymous Content is like, hey, we got Quentin Tarantino, he's going to direct 5 commercials a year now, everyone would be lining up to give them millions of dollars to see which commercial Tarantino picks.
Yeah, that maybe you would call that stage 5, but I think there's a stage 4 where you're, you know, making big movies, big, like it's rare that you're describing really rarefied air. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, or you're like a Dave Myers, like, you know, one of the biggest music video directors in the world. And I think he still needs to pitch and win jobs, but it's like Justin Bieber, and it's him and like Joseph Kahn and like, you know, you know, huge. It's just like you get to work on huge opportunities, and anything below that, you don't even talk to Dave Myers if you, you know, have $100,000 for
the
music video.
The money to pay for it. Yeah.
So I'm in a place where, you know, I guess the context is I have a family. I have two kids. They're in LA. You know, you have to pay for preschool. You have to help, you know, you have to pay for childcare. We have vehicles. We have, you know, a home.
Pay. Yeah. Sure.
We have like a certain amount of money that needs to be made. And my, you know, this is kind of like a myth, but I find it to be relatively true. And I'm curious what you think about it, is that if somebody calls and offers you a job and you say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not available. They'll probably call you again. Hey, I have another job. But if you give them two, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not available. Like the odds of the third call and even then the fourth call are like close to zero.
I think the more experienced you become, the less true that is, because the thought of, oh, this is perfect for you, is more prevalent. When the stronger your brand is, the clearer it is when to call Oren versus when to call Matt, when first to call somebody else. But when you're starting out and the jobs are less specific to your abilities or talent or reputation, then that the likelihood that that producer is just going to find somebody else that they really like working with, and then that will be their first call, that person. That I think it was truer for us 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could also say, let's say a producer is making 10 spots a year and four of them are comedy spots, you know, and one of them is like wacky comedy and the other one is like kind of slick elevated comedy, and you are known for broad comedy. So you have now 2 out of 10 spots that they might call you first or one of the first people. And if you turn down those two, now it's like next year until they have another comedy spot. And it's, I mean, I have a lot of producers. Our good friend Deb from PPS is always like, oh, Oren, you're too big for me now. And I'm like, no, I'm not too big for you. Like, please call me. But, you know, I think people start getting, based on what you're posting on social media, based on what you're, you know, if creating these illusions that you're working all the time, people are like, oh, this director is too busy, I'm not going to call them. So that's another reason why every opportunity I get, I never take anything for granted. And it doesn't matter the budget, doesn't matter the brand, doesn't matter the creative. Because a lot of times the producer that brings you like a really amazing opportunity will also bring you a really shitty opportunity too. And they are like, I don't know, accepting, like being negative about an opportunity will make them not want to give you more opportunities, right? No matter what it is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And also, like, it's hard to know. Sometimes it's hard to tell the good opportunities from the bad, you know? And I think ultimately it boils down to, like, do you spark to the creative or not? Like, if I always tell people, if the budget's low, but it's within, if it's doable, if the vision of the spot matches the budget, and even if that budget is low, that's okay. It's always just frustrating when you're trying to overreach, basically.
I just want to give a little bit of context on, it's amazing to have opportunities to direct, right? And I think a lot of our listeners have a lot of opportunities to direct, or are trying to figure out which opportunities they should pursue, or want opportunities to direct. So I do not take any of them for granted, but I am at a place where I can't be like, yes to this project, no to that project, yes to... I mean, I can, and I guess that this is part of what my question is for you, but I was going to just tell you about my last week and see how you would navigate it. I do think you are, in general, like a little better at like turning things down than I am. Like when
we'll
invite you to hang out.
Sure, that's true. I'm good at that. I feel like I did... We went to a party
together. We did go to a party. You know why? Because you listened to our episode on networking, and you were like, I guess I should network.
Whether you're in LA and you have access to parties like this, or you know, you're in a smaller market or whatever, it's valuable just to kind of connect with people and just kind of rub off on each other. you know, like the, like, oh, what are you working on? What's going on with you? How's that going? Oh, you meet this producer, that producer, you lay each other up, you say, oh, this person's so great at this, or like, oh, I loved their spot. You know, just kind of like helping each other out and trading ideas is always going to be beneficial. You know, I think that it was nice to go to something without any sort of agenda besides like saying hi to old pals and like hopefully meeting some people who we could help each other out someday. You know, back to your point, though. Yeah.
So last week, my wife is an actor. As everyone knows, she was in New Mexico for 8 days. I was alone with my 8-year-old and my 2-year-old. So that already is kind of like nuts. You know, they both have stuff to do during the weekday.
Honestly, you should have just taken off work. Like you should have just been like, I'm just a stay at home dad for this time. And like any school time is like bonus, basically. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of what the conversation is about. Like, would you do that? Would you say, hey, I'm alone with my kid. I'm not available to work on anything.
Yeah, well, so I guess I'm cutting you off at the pass, and being a little flippant, right? Like, certainly I wouldn't. I don't know any
filmmaker, especially a freelance filmmaker, that would be like, "Hey, I'm not available because I'm watching my kid." All of us are like, "Yep, available." Oh yeah, I'm just like got put a show on for the kid or whatever. But
yeah,
but it's like, I mean, it's a full on. Like any parent knows this, and like when my wife is here, we are really a team. Like in the morning, like we have to make them breakfast, we have to make them lunch, we have to get them to school on time, we have to get them dressed, we have to, you know, we're potty training our son, we have to get him to pee and poo, like all the things. And our daughter loses something, she freaks out, like you got to take him to gymnastics and to soccer and to swimming and to piano lessons and to the play rehearsal and all the stuff. And I just had to do it 100% by myself. At the same time, I took a pretty big VFX job, like 100 shots on a movie a couple months ago, because that's how that stuff works. Like, hey, are you available? And you're like, yeah, I'm available next week. And then, you know, that job ends up starting like 5 weeks later when you're not so available anymore, but you don't want to turn it down. And they've already like briefed you on everything and talked. So that's like a month long job that I'm just, what I love about VFX is kind of a side hustle, is you just do it whenever you can squeeze it in. So usually I do VFX like, you know, from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. or some weird time. If I just need to de-stress and listen to a podcast, I'll try to bust out a few shots. But so I have this huge job. I have my scripted podcast that I, you know, told you about, that we had submitted our first 4 episodes and we're just waiting for notes. And then I just got like all these things in a row, like 4 different I didn't get 4 different jobs. I got 4 different job opportunities. And so in the commercial world, what that means is that you get on a phone call with the people that want to give you the opportunity. They tell you about it. Then you go, you create an entire presentation. Like the one presentation I presented yesterday was 43 pages long. I shot 2 test videos. I don't know if you saw my post on Instagram where I had masking tape, a PVC pipe to my back.
Did you make like a snorri cam basically, or what was
it? It was like a snorri cam, but it was more about a light. I was trying to rig a light above my head. So anywhere I walked, like I would be lit, but like the rest of the room would not be lit. I would be like exposed correctly for the camera. But it was a pitch for this job where these people are glowing. And I was trying to.
And you're like, this is how I would make them practically glow. And then you plus it in effects basically.
Yeah. So everything, my pitch for everything was like, there's people that are flying in the air and there's people that are moving really fast. And my pitch is like practical as much as possible. And we'll, you know, do some things in post to.
Did you reference some, what's that? There's that fashion film of the people flying.
Oh yeah. Burberry.
Burberry. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really good.
Reference, I mean, except the hard part is theirs is outdoors and ours is indoors. But it is the same idea. So if you haven't seen it, you should see it. The Burberry, I don't know what so you should good. Type. Burberry flying commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
It's these people like running through a field and flying in the air. And they did it in kind of the most obvious way. They had these cranes that were drivable and cameras that, you know, were flying on I don't know if they were on a drone or like a long track or something.
I feel like there was also like big wind machines or maybe helicopters involved as well. Like the, which was
the Harry Styles music video is, I think.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Helicopters.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically people hanging from wire. Like my pitch was also like, well, let's get like the freaking Cirque du Soleil people, you know, to be these people that are flying in these kind of everyday people. So it's like my new thing is like, just why not just cast like a dancer, a professional mover for every single part that doesn't have dialogue, that's more about posing and rhythm than it is about performance. I mean, that is a performance too, of course.
So anyway, an elaborate pitch.
An elaborate pitch. Yeah. That was one of the pitches. And then I had another, you know, and so three of my pitches came from the company that I'm, two of them came from the company I'm working with, Art Class. Mm-hmm. One of them directly contacted me and said, hey, we need a production, you know, a production company. So I connected them with Art Class. And then another one contacted me directly. It was just like a promo thing. So I talked to them. I sometimes don't even know how people find me. Sometimes they're like, oh, we saw you on this website, or we follow you on Instagram, or we don't remember how we found you, but we've been following you for a long time. So
we don't remember how we found you is the most annoying one, because you're like, well, that's cool, but also like, I can't, now I don't have any, that's a missing data point for me.
Yeah.
You know?
But one of the pitches, it was last, I guess it was like 2 weeks ago, but they were like, we've been fans of yours for a really long time. We're really looking for opportunities to work on something with you. And we brought this job to you, you know, because I wanted to put you on the list. I'm like, oh, cool. So is it my job? And they're like, no, we're talking to five directors, but like, we really like you and we would love to see what you do with this creative. And it was totally wrong for me. It was like a docu-style, like real people thing. And I went and I like pitched on it. It wasn't like a huge pitch, but yeah, I didn't get it. You know?
I'm sorry, is this an Art Class job?
No, this was a non-Art Class job.
Gotcha.
So, but you know, again, like not turning anything down. If someone comes to you and it's like, I've been a fan of you forever. I have a company, we do promos, and it's like the brand, it was for a brand and a TV show. And it's like the top five TV show that you've 100% seen, and a top five beverage brand that you've 100% drank in combination with each other. So it's like, and in a cool setting with cool talent.
Sure. So you're like, yeah, I'd love to try it out.
Yeah. But I can name 10 directors that have better reels for this job. So, you know, and it was one of those things where even as I was pitching back to them, kind of telling them how I would do it, they're like, you know, if we don't get to work with you on this one, like, it'd be awesome to work with you on something else. I'm like,
that's nice of you guys.
You know that means I don't get it. And I just spent like 2 days watching this show, thinking about this, writing things down.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a full on treatment. Anyway, so that was one of the things. Another one was like a repeat client, but they also wanted a treatment. Another one was, just randomly called me. It was an animal related one, which I'm actually... I think it's fine to say, but I'm pitching against Jordan Brady on it. We don't know who.
Oh, nice.
We don't know who got the job yet, because they just kind of like went radio silent. And then we had this the last big thing was this giant job that was actually offered to somebody else at Art Class originally. And then he couldn't do it. And so they're like, oh, Oren, full transparency. They wanted someone else, but he isn't available. So we offered them you, and they're like, okay, yeah, Oren can pitch on it. So already you're starting kind of like at a place below, but it's like a good budget. It's like a really good actor. It shoots in Mexico. And this actor is someone that everyone would recognize. You for sure would know her name. And a pretty big campaign, pretty good budget. And at the same time, you know, I had done that Super Bowl stuff for Paramount, like that they really liked. So people from there were like, hey, Oren, we'd love to put you up for other things. And, you know, so I'm always just like, yeah, of course, put me up.
Sure, sure.
Like, we got something for this airline. But that's all I knew, is that they were putting me up and they're showing me and they're showing a bunch of other directors. And they're like, yeah, this shoots in May. Whatever. I don't even look at the dates, because nothing is real until you get the job, right? And they all push anyway, right? Every single job is like, they're like, okay, it's going to shoot the week of May 6th. Then it's like,
week
of May 13th. Yeah. And you're like, okay, I don't have the job. It's me against two to four other directors for every single job that I need to fight for. So like my this rule I learned back in the day was you just never say no
to a
job until you are 100% booked on a job. Yeah. Right?
Yes. And I stand by that.
So if five different people are like, hey, are you available the week of May 6th? You basically say, yes, I'm in talks for, about other projects that are that week, but I have not booked anything yet.
It makes me think of a producer that I work with sometimes who doesn't listen to the show. So if you're listening to the show, I'm not talking about you. Just right. to be clear. But who will only text me, which is harder to search, harder to parse. It's like, gosh. But they'll, if I give any reason for them not to pitch me, if there's anything where I'm like, unless I have like the exact right perfect answer for like, yes, here's a perfect reel or whatever, they end up just disappearing like a few texts later. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just like, okay, like 2 or 3 months later, I'll be like, hey, I got another gig. You know, what do you think of this? You've worked with this type of person, right? And I'll be like, if it would be like, hey, you've worked with cats, right? I could be like, yes, I've worked with cats many times, but they're all kittens. That alone would be like, I wouldn't even get, maybe the next one, let me dig around or whatever. That would just be it. Like, it has to be like, I fit the glove perfectly.
Right. But they're probably texting like 10 directors.
Sure. Sure.
Right. And then, one of the directors responds with a link to their videos with cats.
And it is the difference between having a good relationship with a production company, an exclusive relationship with a production company. That's what that's the trade-off, right? Is that like you have to turn down other opportunities sometimes or make it work some other way, or it just gets there's a wrinkle, it's a touch more complicated. But they know how to like use that imagination and be like, oh, he has done kittens and he's done full aged dogs, adult dogs or whatever. And so they can pitch you better. Right. But yeah, that sort of behavior, I feel like it creates a culture of anxiety around how you respond to them. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't facilitate getting the best work sometimes, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not helpful. I mean, there's 4 or 5 producers that like when they're like, hey, Oren, we got this thing. It's for Netflix. Like, are you up? Mm-hmm. Like, it's this, you know, hidden camera thing. Mm-hmm. Shooting in LA. Maybe you want to do it. I always say yes. And literally 0 times has it ever worked out. And I just know that these people, like, I'll say sure. But if they ask me for like a full blown pitch, I'll probably be like, I can't. Can I just send you a reel or something? You know?
Yeah. So to get to the, just to recap where we are conundrum. Yeah.
And I haven't even like kind of gotten to like the question.
Okay. What's the question?
So Friday morning, this is last Friday, right? Today is Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Last Friday morning, you know, we
still solo parenting,
wake up at 7 a.m. change pee sheets. Right. Cause we're trying to sleep through the night without a diaper, make breakfast, make the lunches, do the things, help find the hairbrush, get the kids to school, everything. I come home. It's like, hey, this other director isn't available. Will you hop on a call to pitch on this thing? And now I'm like late in the game to pitch on this thing. So it's this big job, shoots in Mexico. Treatment is due on Monday, right? This is Friday. Great.
Top of day Monday.
They needed by 2 p.m. I think so.
Just as a quick reminder, where are you on, like now you're more friendly to the idea of working with designers and writers?
I've yet to work with a writer, but I work with a treatment layout person. So
yeah,
usually I'll pull images, they'll pull images, we'll combine them, and then I'll do all the writing and like the writing is. It's not just writing. It's not just write 45 pages worth of treatment stuff. And when I say a page, you know, sometimes a page will be 3 sentences about you know, a location or wardrobe or something.
Or a headline or a transitional slide, you know, actors and then, you know, each of the characters or whatever.
But you have to figure out what the pitch is before you write. So I have to, like for this one, I called Carlin and talked to her for an hour about, like, I'm like, here's the thing. What's like a funny thing that can happen with someone that's flying in the air? What's a funny thing that can happen with someone that's glowing? You know, trying to really figure it out. It takes me at least a day to figure that out, you know, and to watch stuff and to get inspired before I can write.
And also, honestly, I'm kind of, you know, layout is part of that also. Like, it helps you organize your thoughts and see where the holes are of like, oh, I should think more about the cinematography that, you know, there isn't enough there on this page yet. You know, is this clear? Is it clear to me? Yeah.
Well, the thing I do like in every treatment is every page, I write a lot. So like if there will be like three paragraphs on a page, I'll try to figure out what's the most important sentence on this page and like highlight it. And you see the layout designer like highlight just like the first sentence. And it makes me think like, oh, maybe the first sentence should be the most important one. Because oftentimes my first sentence is just kind of saying like, hey, I'm on the same page as you, right? This is going to take place in an office and it's going to be modern. And you're not, that's not a big idea. That's like, you're telling them what they told you and that's not a helpful thing for them to read, you know?
When I was doing more creative director work, we were constantly talking about hooks, right? A hook was a phrase we used every other sentence. Hook was in there. But it did permeate the way that I approach a lot of different things. And you should hook in the beginning, essentially, of each paragraph. Like, what is the thing you're talking about? What's surprising about it? What's unique about it? And then you explain from there. But like leading with
It's like
the catchiest, grabbiest idea is smart, for sure.
It's like elementary school essay writing, right? It's like you lead with a thesis and and it should be something interesting and simple and different than what it should be answering their question of what is your vision, as opposed to telling them like, we want this to be fun and colorful when they told you they want it to be fun and colorful, you know?
Sure.
They don't want to hear
surprising is actually, I think when people say hook, they often mean surprising.
Yeah. Basically. Or just captivating. Like, I mean, I watched this Instagram ad about this. I might have mentioned it before, but this, it looks like a docu kind of style ad where it's like this woman's like, do you know how much I pay for this apartment? Let me show it to you. And as they walk into the apartment, they notice the welcome mat. And then the person recording it is like, wait, is that your welcome mat? It's pretty awesome. And they're like, yeah. And you can wash it. It goes right in the washing machine. And it's like, they use the hook about like how high rent is to advertise a welcome mat.
I don't know if you realize, but like that format of like, oh, show me your apartment. It's like a very popular thing on TikTok like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know if I knew that that specifically was a thing, but it felt great. Like it felt like, hey, this is the type of thing people love paying attention to.
It feels organic to it either way.
Anyhow. So I have this treatment, right? And they're like, and everyone at art class is like, dude, we got to blow this out of the water. Like, and I find out who I'm up against. And it's like some pretty freaking good directors, you know?
It's also worth saying, and this isn't specific to art class, it's specific to the art or the advertising world. It's so competitive that you're surrounded by workaholics.
Oh yeah. Everyone. And no one other than me has like two kids at home that they're solo parenting over the weekend. Like,
I'm at that party. I think we talked to most of the parents.
Right.
That's not totally fair, but like,
yeah, you're saying there's not a ton of parents.
Yeah.
So they're like, do you need a story? We're going to get you a storyboarder. So we're going to get you someone to do an animatic. And I'm like, I do not know what to tell them. Like, do you realize that me getting a storyboard artist is a day of my time that I actually need to spend writing and also potty training and driving my daughter to play rehearsal and all this other swim lessons, like all this stuff. So I was like, I'll make some test videos myself that I'm in control of the schedule. And, you know, I can stick my kids in one of my test videos, which is always, at least it gives me something to do with them for an hour. Anyway, so this whole thing is going on. I'm like already so stressed about this. I realize I basically my migraine pattern is whenever I have a treatment due is when I get one. An hour later, I get an email from Paramount, you know, those Super Bowl promo people. They're like, Oren, good news. the airline just approved you to be the person to direct this thing. And I was like, okay, when, where, and what is it? Because I know zero details. And they're like, well, we didn't tell you much because it wasn't locked in, but it's got this amazing, like, entertainer, actor, comedian that everybody knows. It's got this awesome up and coming actress from this show that everybody knows. It's going to be seen by tens of millions of people, including you, every time you get on an airplane, on your favorite airline. So I'm like, oh man, that sounds really good. And when does it shoot? And it's like, oh, exactly at the same time as the Mexico job, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And so just the recap, the most important piece of information is that it's not an art class job.
It's not an art class job, and it's not a competitive job. It is mine if I want it. And so it's like, we showed them a bunch of directors. They picked you. They said they don't need a treatment or anything. They trust us. They like your passport.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Your job, same week, not art class. And this is already, I've already briefed the treatment designer, the image puller. We're already like, everyone's planning how to spend their entire weekend working on this treatment that's due on Monday. And I'll remind you, it's like a 43 page.
Yeah, this is bad.
So I tell Paramount people, hey, I got this other thing I'm pitching on. I don't know exactly what day it's going to shoot that week, but they're like, can you just let us know by the weekend? And I was like, let me let you know on Monday. I have my pitch on Monday. It's a very competitive pitch, and I'll let you know right after the pitch. I like my gut and feeling on how it went. So I have my pitch on Monday. This was yesterday at like noon. And the Paramount people are on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. So like I'm already 3 hours behind. We've just starting off. and I do my pitch. The executive creative director does not show up to the pitch. It's a horrible sign. Mm-hmm. When like the most important, like creative
decision maker
is not on your pitch, it's a really bad sign. I pitch my whole pitch. Like I mentioned, it's 43 pages. It's about all these different commercials, the whole campaign, all this stuff, how I'm going to work with pitch. And the whole time I'm like, you know, I pitch like 10 pages. Mm-hmm. I'm like, any questions? What do you guys think? They're like, nope. Great. Keep going. Whole time. We get all the way to the end of the pitch. And I'm like, okay, and then that's it. You know, I literally said the end because no one was saying anything.
Ta-da. Yeah.
And I was like, any questions, thoughts? And they're like, no, this is cool. Like those test videos are really cool. Like we really see how we really understand the process that you would go through to film something like this. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting way to phrase the feedback. Mm-hmm. You don't have a question about this specific thing or how we're going to like this.
You understand. Do you like it?
Is
it?
Yeah. Do you like, but also like you're saying, like a lot of times, you know, whether you're going to get the job or not, people will be like, oh, cool. So when we're on set, when we're in Mexico, how would you do this? How would you would you do this? And we're worried about this. We heard that this thing with the schedule or the sunlight or whatever, but nothing. That was the only thing is this like very like passive. Mm-hmm. Like it almost felt like they were choosing their words carefully to make sure I didn't think I had the job, you know?
Well, and also sometimes you'll hear the questions they often have highlight the things they have anxiety about and what's most important to them.
Exactly.
Like, oh, we're unsure of how to do this thing. You know, I know you mentioned in your treatment, but blah, 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 blah. What about this or that or whatever? Or like, oh, I'm so glad you did this because we've been really worried about it. And that seems like a good solve.
Yeah. Or they'll just be like, ooh, this is cool. I didn't think about it that way, you know, but they just were nodding. They were listening. They were, you know, laughing at like the jokes and stuff, but they weren't like asking anything. They weren't interacting with like my creative. And so, and then the producer, the agency producer, you know, says, okay, we're going to, you know, if we have any notes on the treatment before we show it to the client, we're going to send them to you this evening and then you'll have till 10 a.m. tomorrow when we meet with the client to put them in the treatment, right? Which is a totally normal thing, right? Because if they like you, if you pitch to me, Matt, and you're like, this is going to do this and this is going to do this,
and then
this thing's going to explode. But I know the client hates explosions.
Yeah. Can you change explosions to
squeaks.
Disasters?
Yeah. Whatever. So it's 6 p.m., nothing, no notes, no one has responded to us. And I text the Paramount people. I'm like, dude, I'm like 99% sure I'm going to be fully available. I don't think I have this job. It's super competitive. The main creative decision maker didn't show up, like all this stuff. And I text all my people in art class, my production company. I'm like, guys, I have this other job. It's a yes, it's mine. It's got great talent, great schedule, great rate, like everything. I want that job. Like, I don't want to lose that job and not get this job. And all signs point to us not getting this job. And they're like, okay, well, let's just wait till tomorrow morning when they present to the client. And I'm like, Paramount, will you please let me just give me one more day to let you know if I'm available. And they're like, fine. So that today is Tuesday. And this morning I'm like, hey, have we heard anything? And everyone's like, no, we've all reached out to the producer. We're not hearing anything back, but they're presenting to the client at 10. I'm like, I'm like so nervous because my person from Paramount is like, hey, I'm going in this meeting with the airline in like 1 hour. I need to tell them if you're on board or not. Or we have a long list of directors. We'll just go to the next director.
Sure. Yeah, we'll just go to the next person.
But we need to lock this in today. And like 12:30, like half an hour before this Paramount person needs to go into the meeting, my producer at art class gets a text from the client, you know, and they're like, you know, we'll let you know by one where it's headed. But, you know, Oren is like one of the favorites. It's looking promising.
One of the favorites. It's looking promising.
Yes.
It's like the,
we have two really good options.
Yeah.
I think they said we have two really good options.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what? Cause sometimes they'll be honest, you know, and we told them like, hey, Oren is being heavily asked about another job and we don't want to say no if there's no chance he's going to get this. And they're like, oh no, there's a good chance. It looks promising. So then they present to the client. I beg Paramount. I'm like, please just like, you know, give me one more day. And they're like, fine. And so after the Mexico job, the presentation, they come back to us then and they're like, okay, here's all the notes. They're worried about the lighting. They feel like your treatment was a little on the dark side and they want to make sure it feels like hopeful and optimistic. And can you change this and this and this? And we remake the whole treatment. So now Tuesday night, I'm recording with you. I do not know about this Mexican job. I have to tell Paramount tomorrow morning whether I am taking this job or not.
Listeners, I'm sorry that I'm as stressed out as you are.
Well, good. On top of that,
I'm not as stressed as Oren, but I'm
sorry. The last thing I forgot to mention is Friday afternoon. I also finally had my notes call with Audible for the scripts for this podcast. And it was like, it's not a page one rewrite note session, but it's like not far from it.
Rough. Yeah. Gotcha.
So I'm just like, and don't forget, I still have my 40 VFX shots left for this feature that are due like this week. And now I have like two more treatments to write. So it's Uptown Problems. Like I said, I'm so excited to have these, but no job is locked in yet, you know? And so it's like, I have to keep saying yes to the treatments and I have to keep saying yes because I don't want to burn bridges and I don't want to not pitch on something, because sometimes you can work for an entire month as a freelance director, like trying to get jobs, and you feel like all you're doing is working like 20 hours a day, but you've actually made no money.
Not made any money.
Because you don't get paid to pitch. Sometimes you do, but usually you don't.
Yeah, it's that's the rub, right? Okay, so first of all, it sounds like I didn't expect to say this, but it sounds like you did everything right. Right. Like clear communication. You were open. No one's mad at you, which is, you know, when you tell us these stories.
Yeah. Usually someone's like disappointed in me.
Someone's like, well,
I do want to mention, I did remember I had that situation where I had two jobs. Then one of the days overlapped the two day
you
shoots.
Screwed the pooch on
that person that hired me for the first job has never called me again. And they've called the other person. Yeah, he has like two potential jobs with him right now. So
thanks, Oren. Thanks for the call.
I have gotten screwed for kind of double booking in the past. Not screwed. I mean, I burned bridges unintentionally.
It was your mistake, but well done on that front.
And I'll give you all the details of who's in it. I think the like celebrity level is pretty equal between the two jobs. One of them, if it makes any difference, I think the Mexico job would pay about twice as much as the LA job.
It kind of doesn't make a difference, right? Because, and I know that sounds like kind of a flippant thing to say, but like it would be disappointing if you got both and you turned one down for the other, and the creative is equally good and the star power is equally high, and so you're making half as much money as you could have. That would be disappointing for sure, but like really what we're talking about is just like the uncertainty of knowing what to do or who to say yes to first.
Yeah, and also having one in the bag but the other one that you feel like
it's the let's make a deal problem, right? Like you could upgrade for whatever's behind door number three.
Right. But also, it's not just me. Like, a bunch of people would be upset with me if I didn't upgrade, you know?
So,
yeah, I guess it is like a game show. It's like, do you want to risk it all for this slightly bigger thing?
Yeah. Yeah. The difference is, though, is your point of like the relationships, right? So, I think if you look at it as your reps who've been very good to you and are supporting you and are continuing to put you up for things. I maybe am loyal to a fault in that way. I would side with the reps basically. And you did everything right by like looping them in early, and the other job, it's rare that they're not looped in, but like, because it's basically direct to consumer.
Yeah. My people would not get any money.
They wouldn't. Yeah.
They have no,
not only would they not get any money, but like, but there's no, they have no ability to compete with one another. That's the thing that's tricky when you're exclusive to a roster. And then you say, oh yeah, I'd love to do this job with someone else. You know, if they had the jurisdiction to be able to be like, hey, we could have bid you for this job. Why are we investing our time in you when you're, you know, dancing around town with all these other.
Right. I mean, the only thing, and I do think if you are a commercial director, like trying to on your way to becoming one, I do think a very smart company, you know, executive producer or producer at a production company will realize like, oh, Matt, you know, this, like, we know you have this opportunity to do this like amazing VFX, epic VFX journey spot with someone else. And if you have that spot on your reel, it's going to make it way easier for us to sell you.
Yeah.
So do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just about communication. So when do you hear on the Mexico job?
Supposedly tomorrow, but they said that the actress also has to approve me. And you know how that goes.
Yeah, it'll take you a week. You're fucked, man.
Yeah. So I don't know, but it's
I honestly, listeners at home, I did not know the extent of this story. I would have probably tightened the middle at least.
Sorry,
but I thought for sure I was going to have a decisive answer for you.
I mean, the bummer about the job that I would have to turn down is that I will 100% see that. Spot,
yeah,
like
yeah,
20 times a year.
Yeah,
for the next couple of years. Sometimes we feel like we're in control, but that like ethos of just say yes, you're available to every single thing, even if everyone wants to schedule the same week, like odds are high that it will all work out.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
But you just have to be ready for something to blow up.
You just have to be ready for
it. Can I tell you, you know, I shot a spot in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, and one of our actors, you know, we cast local Atlanta people, mm-hmm. and like, I'm putting local in quotes because everyone says they're local, but then they fly in from LA. One of our actors, didn't like miss, his flight was canceled, Spirit Airlines, and he just never showed up to set.
Did they call and say, hey, I can't
make it. He was like, hey, my flight got canceled, I'm gonna sleep at the airport. There's some issues, some weather stuff, whatever. We just like went, you know, to our cast, and we rearranged the day so we wouldn't have to shoot his part till a little later, and we just went to like our backup basically.
It's crazy.
Anyhow, scheduling, I guess maybe there is no answer. I do think usually you're pretty good at pointing out what I did wrong. And and I do think that like when you, a reason to be on a roster for a production company as a director or to work for a company, like you work for a company right now, is to avoid these things, right? Like if some job comes in for Matt, it's like, well, Matt's not available from this time to this time. He's shooting the show on these days. So if you want Matt to work on your thing, these are the available times. And maybe they'll be like, okay, well, I guess we'll go to someone else. But when we're freelancers, we don't want people to go to someone else, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that it, you know, the trade-off, the thing I've been thinking about a lot is that like this job, the show could get canceled. I could get fired. It can all go away. Like there's a false sense of security when you're on a longer term gig. And you know, there's a world, like eventually this show is going to end and I'm going to need to go back to freelancing. You know what I mean? Unless I go get like another long-term gig, which, you know, who knows? I there's things I like about it and there's things that I don't like, if I'm being honest. I'm a pirate. I'm a mercenary. I love freelancing, but the security of it is nice just to have kind of these bigger, longer jobs. What I'm getting at is that like, if you let the connections go away, if the work kind of stagnates because you're doing one thing over and over again, you know, like I'm hitting people up now to be like, oh, hey, you know, the season's almost over. We're going to have a little hiatus. I'd love to reconnect just to kind of keep a heartbeat going on things. And it's a job where like if the right thing comes up, I can step away. That's not a problem at all. But so it puts you in this weird limbo. You know, I don't envy the stress that you are under right now, but I do think that there is, we've talked about this a lot, there is a difference between the hustle of feeling like you can't turn something down and that you have to make yourself available and that you're just constantly pitching does change the metabolism of your career. Do you know what I mean? Like, in the last 2 years, I've been in relatively cushy situations, and I'm really grateful for that. The strike has been a pox on our industry. But if you look at the number of spots I have done in the last 2 years versus the number of spots that you've done in the last 2 years, it's night and day. Do you know what I mean? And your career has grown because of it in a very thing. Also, you're talented, all of that stuff. But like, just as like, as a clean comparison, we are not in the same league anymore when it comes to what we are pitching on, for sure. And that, you know, is complicated for me, right? Not compare. I don't need to compare and despair about this, but like, as just a pace car, is that what it is in NASCAR? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to see, like, okay, we were both running at the same speed, and then I tied my shoelaces for 2 years, and then I'm looking around, and I was like, oh, Oren's much further down the track now.
Yeah, and like a very specific, in a very specific type of race.
Sure,
I think of it as like, you know, Craig Mazin and John August on Script Notes, the podcast that inspired this podcast. Script Notes is about screenwriting, and John August, I remember I'd always be like, yeah, he wrote Go.
Sure.
He wrote Charlie's Angels. Mm-hmm. He wrote Frankenweenie. He wrote The New Aladdin. He wrote Big Fish. Like this guy.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. And
he's the good one.
He's the good one. Yeah. And Craig Mazin wrote Identity Thief, Hangover 2, mm-hmm. not another teen movie or whatever.
Hangover 3.
Scary movie. And you're like, yeah, he's like the schlocky one, you know?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden, and out of nowhere,
yeah,
Craig Mazin writes Chernobyl. Like, you know, he's like smart and crotchety, you know, just from listening to the podcast. But you don't realize that, like, he had it in him to make amazing stuff after he'd made like very kind of poorly reviewed stuff.
Sure.
And then his next show is, The Last of Us, like one of, you know, top five hits of last year, and makes him most desirable man in the world. You know, now I think he's doing some other amazing shows.
He's the good one. Yeah, for sure.
John August is selling software. No, I mean, he's still writing great stuff, and he wrote books, and he's still, you know, obviously a big screenwriter, but his pace is not accelerate. Like, you know, John August is cruising at 45 miles per hour, and Craig Mazin went from like 15 to like 80.
Sure. Well, hopefully I pull a Mazin one of these days soon.
But no, I think I'm the Mazin.
I see. Okay.
The crotchety, grumpy Jewish one.
Oh.
And you're the nice.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess the difference being, like, our careers were very similar. And then, of course, like, caring about features and, like, the, not that you don't care about narrative and wouldn't go do a feature again, but, like, you focused up. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess we were both doing that college humor, Funny or Die stuff at the same time. And then we both did, like, the Go 90 stuff at the same time. And you were at Comedy Central, and I was at Disney, and then we're kind of getting into branded content and commercial stuff. But then, you kind of moved more TV episodic, and I kind of, I guess, focused more on commercials.
All of this is to say, there's no right answers, guys, pals, friends. I hate using the term grind, but like, you have to continue to keep your momentum going no matter what, right? Whether that's creative momentum or career heat or whatever. Yeah. Unfortunately, I guess as a result, there's always a struggle to it. You know, I think you and I are both relatively anxious people. You lean more towards stress. I lean more towards anxiety, but still the point is that, like, what we're really talking about is we are affected by the bigger picture of all of this negativity and anxiety in the industry right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't get on industry onto like IMDb Pro or like Twitter, any social media, without seeing like regular headlines about how fewer shows are being made and like the industry is contracting. And, you know, Zaslav gave himself a $50 million raise while we're laying people off left and right. If you want to be depressed, go on LinkedIn, right? Because it's not just Hollywood. It's tech and video games as well. And so like and advertising, any of the sectors that I have any interest or contact in, everyone's like, what do we do? I will say I saw a couple positive posts today of like, hey, things are heating back up. So who knows, maybe things will be better.
Yeah, I think it.
But that's where some of that anxiety comes from, or that's the background that's fueling all of this. If it was 2019, 2018, where jobs were plentiful and everyone we knew was booking consistently, doing well, and there wasn't as big of a chasm between the people who were still working and the people who were just having a rough go, if that divide was smaller, I think a lot of this would weigh less on you, I think. Well,
yeah. Well, thanks, Matt. Thanks for solving all my problems as usual.
I nailed it.
You got a minute to do some endorsing?
Unpaid endorsements.
So I felt bad this weekend for not texting you about this, but having heard about your weekend, I was like, oh, maybe it's not something you wouldn't have had time. You're familiar with the Bob Baker Marionette Theater.
Oh yeah. Chrissy post about it. That was Bob Baker Day or something.
There was Bob Baker Day. So Bob Baker Marionette Theater is a theater that started in the 60s and is kind of this bastion of like vintage retro marionette theater that I think maybe we've talked about on my podcast before, but essentially it's for little children the young at heart, and it's like, you know, like a variety show of fun marionettes doing little dances and things like that, and the recordings are all old-fashioned and retro and stuff, and it's got this great kind of community around it of young puppeteers and the fans and all that. So anyway, they do this thing called Bob Baker Day. This was the 10th one. I thought, we've been to a few, like many Bob Baker shows and like a few of their events in like Pasadena or at whatever. I thought it would just be like a bunch of kids out in a field at a park watching a stage show or whatever, and we'd call it a day. It was like a music festival
with marionettes
vibe, but just with marionettes.
Coachella.
It was
Stringella.
Like, if you could have Coachella, but then also toddlers and up to like, you know, probably there were probably a few 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds around, but like mostly like young kids, elementary school kids, and younger. And the vibes were incredible. All of the different things that were happening were really fun. There's like a little parade and different vendors and stuff. You could get like a sign painter could like paint, you know, your name in kind of this retro style or whatever you want to write. It was really cool.
I saw a video on Instagram of someone getting their name painted in that style. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
It's really
like a
cool
surf shop, kind of like beachy.
Wouldn't it be
brush
neat?
Strokes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so it just felt like I was at a music festival that was just so purely about this old art form. But there was no sense of needing or wanting to be seen there. Do you know what I mean? We ran into plenty of people that we knew, and you know, it was like a nice vibe in that way. But like, there's not like the like, what's your Bob Baker Day outfit? Even though people were dressed for the occasion too. Do you know what I mean? Like, people were dressed in flamboyant, colorful outfits and stuff. It was really fun. So that's the first endorsement.
Does it cost
Bob
money?
Baker Day. It was free.
It's free. No strings attached.
Ba-dum-ching. If you wanted to buy a marionette, those were $10, but well worth it. So that would be the one thing. So in a year from now, go to Bob Baker Day, set your calendars, follow them on Instagram.
I had a treatment to make, so it's okay. I didn't know about it.
It would have inspired you. It was really beautiful. But one of the vendors there is the thing I'm actually endorsing, and it's called the Tiny Cinema. Mm-hmm. Specifically, it's Davey B. Gravy's Tiny Cinema. And what it is a trailer, like a little like moving trailer, like imagine like a U-Haul, you know, like maybe the cheapest sized U-Haul you can get, you know, like you could probably pull out in a Honda Accord or whatever. And he turned it into a 4-person movie theater. You would go up, you'd sign up, and you choose between one of three vintage Super 8 short films. They were silent films. We watched Alice in Wonderland. It was 2.5 minutes long. You walk in, there's a little velvet curtain. He gives a little, Davy B. Gravy gives a speech. And then he pulls the little lever and the curtain opens and you hear the reel of the Super 8 projector. And then he plays a banjo and an accordion and a keyboard and live scores the 2.5 minute movie. And it's just you and three other people. Maybe there's a kid in your lap. And it was so great.
That's awesome.
It was great. That's my endorsement.
Awesome. Awesome. I'll try to find Davy Gravy.
Davy B. Gravy.
Oh, Davy B.
Davy Gravy, I think, is probably a...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. He's a clown.
Cool.
Kaplan, what you got?
I got three endorsements. The first one is incredibly stupid. I just thought about it while I was here talking to you or listening to you. And then I have two very douchey ones. So my stupid one is if you...
I love that I've inspired a stupid and two douchey.
No. I had the douchey ones.
I'm teasing.
Myself. You just inspired the stupid one, which is if you need a really good click sound effect, like something and mm-hmm. sometimes someone clicks a mouse, like a cursor on something mm-hmm. that's like, mm-hmm. it launches something that's important in a movie or commercial or something. Like a great thing that my wife and I kind of realized recently, Kara, is a pen click is like a perfect click. We were trying to find like a prop
For like a mouse double click?
For anything, like, or I guess a... I mean, you can do it. There we go. Click.
That, so for listeners at home, Oren, the first pen he did was one that rotate them, you twist it rather than depressing the end. The depressing of the end, I think, is right on.
Well, because my wife and I was reading with her for an audition and my character had to like go through slides. You know, it was doing a mm-hmm. PowerPoint presentation mm-hmm. and I was like making clicks with
she's
my...
Like,
she's like, no,
that, Oren, that's, no, don't that's do that. Not going to work.
And she's like, grab a pen. And I was like, whoa, this is like the perfect click. And I'm always like trying to record my mouse click and it's just not mm-hmm, that impressive. Mm-hmm. Like this is a mouse click. And this is a pen click.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do. Well, let me ask you a question, actually. When you record... your own sound effect. Do you then go in and like mix, like EQ it? Like, are you like in the waveform kind of like
sometimes
boosting the bass or like, you know, warming it up or anything like that?
I would maybe do like a bass thing. It depends, right? If I'm like recording, like doing more sound design and less like Foley, then mm-hmm. I'll like add a reverb or make it. I usually mm-hmm. like play with mm-hmm. the volume for sure. But sometimes
sure, volume for sure.
A little compression. Sometimes I'll do like if I'll slow it down or I'll speed it up mm-hmm. or I'll do a pitch shift. Even with my own voice, if I'm doing temp narration, sometimes I'll like pitch it down, you know, a little bit in Premiere mm-hmm. just so it sounds mm-hmm. like has a little more gravity. but yeah, so that's the first one. Okay. The douchey one. This is, I don't think it gets douchier than this. You're going to cringe. And it's on par with like recommending or endorsing an iPhone. But like right now, the price of a Tesla Model 3 is so insanely low. You can lease a brand new Tesla Model 3, which is like they just redesigned everything. There's a TV screen in the back. If you have mm-hmm, kids, mm-hmm. there's seat heaters, seat
coolers.
You're
all about this Tesla Model 3.
It's $299 a month to lease. That's with like,
oh, that's pretty good.
You know, some money down good. And like, plus yeah. tax or whatever.
How much down? How much down?
That's with like $3,000 down.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
But it's like, it's cheap. It's as cheap as like a freaking Honda Civic or something. I mean, maybe not. It's way cheaper than our Subaru Outback, which I hated. No offense, Subaru drivers compared. This car is just like.
I drove that car. It was nice.
Amazing. Like, you don't need a key. It like you can, I can right now log into it and look through every camera. Like, you know where it's at. There's only two good reasons to not order it, and I think you're going to say them. One uh-huh. is if you can't charge at home, then electric is kind of tricky because one of the advantages is that you never have to go to a gas station, but if you have to go to a charging station, you kind of lost that.
It's worse than going to a gas station. It's like a gas station. You have to be at for 45 minutes.
Yeah, and two is if you just cannot stand the idea of giving Elon Musk money, that's the other valid reason, though.
You're also ignoring... Or if you want to buy your car and not lease it.
Oh, if you want to buy it, it's also a pretty good deal right now. They just lowered the price.
But not $299 a month.
No, but it's you know, it's commensurate with whatever other car would lease at that same price. Mm-hmm. Sure. And I heard like a phrase on the All the Hacks podcast. Mm-hmm. They were talking, he had a car guy on there talking about leases and financing and everything. And he said this term, which just makes so much sense, but I never thought about it this way. And he said, most people are shopping for a monthly payment. Mm-hmm. So they're not really, they don't, because owning a car versus leasing a car is like, yes, with the lease, you kind of get a new car every 3 years. And when you own, maybe you'll keep your car for 15 years or whatever. But at some point you start spending a lot of money on maintenance, you know, mm-hmm. and your car is crappier and your phone doesn't connect as well. Like the Bluetooth, like the technology gets old when it's 10 years old. So like if you buy a car and keep it for 6 years versus lease a car for 3 years, it's kind of like not that different in price mm-hmm. because leasing can be really cheap, especially with cars that keep their value. So, you know, and if you own your own business, like a lot of filmmakers do and independent freelancers, you can write off the entire lease when you own it. You can only write off the depreciation, whatever. Not important, but, you know, I am enjoying it. And it's like we tried to get a different, we looked at 100 different cars, but this, you know, yes, Elon Musk is a freaking maniac. This thing that like the way they think about their cars is different than most manufacturers, and maybe Rivian does the same in some of these electric, but
yeah.
compared to like the traditional manufacturers, they just put an electric engine in a gas car, you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Tesla is like, this is, you know, like we'll add a feature to this car today. Like, oh, people are mm-hmm. saying it's hard for them to read this thing. Well, we'll move the icon over here, you know?
Sure.
Like, yeah, my car cools my seat automatically without me even having to think, and it knows if it's me that I like the temperature at 68 and Kara likes it at 72.
Yeah, that stuff is very like, cool for sure.
It's these things that you never thought you care about that like the iPhone does for you. It's mm-hmm. like the Tesla. Anyhow, it's a really, really good price right now if you're interested. A lot of it has to do with this $7,500 federal credit. My second thing is it's also douchey because it's just like self-congratulatory to me. but I did get, you know, shortlisted on this job today, which means that like I'm going to have an opportunity to pitch on it. And they wrote a paragraph when they sent it to us that say that was like, here's the thing we loved about Oren's work. And they mentioned like some specifics of some of my work. But one of the things they wrote in this paragraph was, on his Instagram, he shows how he can meticulously concept, create, and execute complex spots through scene breakdowns. It's refreshing to see his process and instills a lot of confidence in bringing to life a spot that adds the complexity of working with animals, which this one has the animals in it. But it's the first time I've seen like a client
someone call out
before we're even pitching say, one of the things we liked about Oren mm-hmm. is how he shows his process on Instagram. And so I know I'm always pushing doing that, but like, it's just like more concrete proof that
evidence.
That, and yeah, maybe people don't check it out at all, but it's just like it definitely cannot hurt to share your kind of, you know, behind the scenes.
If you have any questions or tips or thoughts that you want to share with us, you can reach out to either of us and the show is at Just Shoot a Pod across all social media. You can email us at justshootapod@gmail.com or you can message me directly at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. This episode is edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. Our producer is Tyler Small. And you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you all next time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.